Welcome to the 255th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. No, I'm not a grandmother yet. thank you. I hope all is well. I hope everybody's safe. Addie Delaney Meinrich, my registered dietitian, is due any day, and we're still waiting on that little baby Caleb. So, you know, so far so good. Everything's healthy. So maybe next week I'll be a grandmother podcaster. But for now, I'm just a cardiologist and endurance athlete. And I'm happy to report that my endurance athletics is improving. I'm coming back from an injury. For those of you who are new to listening, someplace L4, L5 became impinged through overtraining, overdoing a lot of different things. And I have come back to the point where today, I guess, was my best run. I got lost in Addie Delaney Meinrich's neighborhood running because I am here waiting on the baby to be born. And I did a little extra more than I had planned because I got lost, but I still felt good doing it. So I've been running 2 minutes, walking 30 seconds, and feeling good. I have to say every day that little niche, that little catch has been becoming less and less. And I've kept a journal of the progress. You know, at first it hurt to walk. It hurt to, you know, getting around the 0.7 mile block at my house in Florida was difficult and painful. And, you know, I went back to basics. This is what we all have to do. I had Stuart McGill on the podcast, as you all know, but his books are fabulous as far as figuring out what to do, but starting out with simple bird dog exercises. And, you know, sometimes those bird dog exercises can be, I was able to get onto the ground to do them, but certainly not, you can engage more muscles by doing them on the ground. But some people have to start by leaning, you know, on a chair and doing a bird dog, and then leaning on a table and doing bird dog, and leaning against the wall and finding that position where their muscles release in their back and that they can hold a stable position and do those from there. But I was doing them 2-3 times a day for 5 minutes at a time, along with planks and then adding bridges. And basically went along with adding things that don't hurt. You know, if it hurt, I would back off. I test a little bit, but not, you know, continue to push through something that caused that nerve pain. And if anybody's ever had that nerve pain, you know, it's irritating, it's frustrating. When you go to turn over in bed at night, you have it. It reminds you that it's still there and it's gonna hamper your desired activity. In mine, it was running and biking. Haven't been able to swim because of COVID. But hopefully that will be in the future, not too long, and the pools will start opening up because I do have a swim run event in November. That's the next event on the table, so I do need to get back into the pool. But for now, I'm really happy that the running has coming back. Again, walking and running, and that's what I'm going to do. We had Jeff Galloway on the podcast as well, and I'm really following one of his plans that progresses and what you do with the cadence drill, the run drills, the magic mile drill, and I am enjoying those, and I'm going to try to follow that through. The next marathon is in December, the California International Marathon at this stage, so I'll be using that plan to see if I can better my time, because that's really what I'm after. My first goal in running is to be able to run until I'm no longer breathing. But the second goal is to, you know, improve as long as I possibly can. The third, I guess the second goal should be not to do anything stupid so that I don't injure myself, so that I can keep running. But I still want to improve and push the limits. If we're not improving, we tend to be sliding backwards. So I continue to follow that. And so that's kind of where we are. I can't tell you much about my backyard garden because I'm not there. My mother, who lives with me, said that the tower garden's doing well and she's picking tomatoes every day. So that's a good thing. We're having some rain in Florida. I assume my mango trees are growing, but I don't know. It's secondary to hoping that Addie and Caleb do well in their delivery. I did buy them a tomato plant and basil plant, so I have something to look at in their backyard. Haas, their German Shepherd, is being a substitute dog for me while I'm away from my Samantha and Gretchen, so it all works out. And we've been enjoying plant-based cooking together. We've continued to have office hours as usual. The good thing about COVID is we've managed to do telemedicine and Zoom calls with all our patients. So we really haven't dropped a beat despite me being in Houston. We've done nutrition class here where we're cooking in Addie's kitchen, doing a demo and a slideshow. We're doing exercise class out in her garage gym for our patients. So we really haven't dropped a beat, and that's really, really been good. I have, we could jump right into the COVID aspect of things up front and what's new. And, we continue to learn about that. And again, states are starting to open up again and different, and people are starting to, either complain or criticize how people are going to do it. And, is it overdone? Is it underdone? Should we wear a mask? Shouldn't we wear a mask? And I don't think that, we don't have a lot of good, we don't know. This is all new to us. We've never been through any of this. We're learning, we're practicing. I hope we never have to go through something like this again, but I suspect that maybe we will. We need to learn from it and not judge, but go on, take what's good, leave the rest. The CDC came out with some guidelines, or some evaluations that continue to be new. Chances are touching an object that has been contaminated with COVID is probably not going to result in you getting COVID. So this fear of touching anything, certainly we need to wash our hands. Excessive contact with your face, your mouth, your nose, your eyes is a way to get potentially to get COVID, but it's more from respiratory secretions from other people that either have symptoms or don't have symptoms. The good news is that, 96.6% people or more will not have to seek hospital attention if they get COVID. There's a fair amount of people, maybe upwards of 30%, 35% won't have any symptoms whatsoever. But what we are afraid of is that 0.4 to 1% of people are dying with this disease, and typically they have underlying conditions. Sometimes we don't know of what those underlying conditions may have been. We can attribute to the poor health of an individual, but again, bad things happen to people that aren't too sick. There's always, unexpected events happen in people, and this is an illness to be taken seriously if you contact it. So, 0.4% of people that have symptoms may die. 40% of people may transmit the disease before they're sick. These are estimates, based on what data that have been seen by the CDC. There are mathematical models out there that have been really off the mark. Some have been closer. If you're older than 65% and you have symptoms, it's probably a worse prognosis. On the other hand, if you're less than 49 and you're relatively healthy, there's probably a good chance that you might not even have symptoms. As far as a death risk, again, these are all estimates, but someplace between 0.2 and 1%, perhaps, in people that are symptomatic. But, all this is a statistical analysis that, depending on what you put in the numerator and what you put in the denominator is what you get. It's a serious illness for people that have risk factors, and, we have to be worrisome. There was a study looking at children. We thought that, children were pretty much unscathed, but they may have very few symptoms, but then they can get a post-viral syndrome like a vasculitis. But that's, again, we have to put it in context. You can have a regular cold and get a post-viral syndrome. There are a certain number of people each year that after a regular common cold come down with a cardiomyopathy, and they have complete heart failure with this cardiomyopathy. And when that happens, 30% of them get better, 30% of them get worse, 30% of them are left with very poor heart function. That's a real thing, and it happens after a viral. It's called a post-viral cardiomyopathy. The same thing happens in children after a cold. There are vasculitis type syndromes. Henoch-Schönlein purpura is a vasculitis that actually my daughter got after probably a common cold that affects the vasculature to the kidneys and the lungs and the muscles. And you can have pulmonary hemorrhages and renal insufficiency and bruising. And it's a really scary thing. Most kids get better with just supportive care. My daughter did. You know, there was a 20% risk of kidney failure. It was very scary at the time. You know, I didn't even know of the cold that she had was no worse than any other regular cold. And then she had this syndrome. So nobody really knows. And the other thing that kids can get is what's called a Kawasaki disease, where they actually get coronary artery abnormalities after a viral syndrome. And sometimes it doesn't even show up till later in life that people have these dilated coronary arteries that were probably post-viral. So, you know, although we're used to getting, you know, we call things the common cold and people get past it, you know, life is not without risk and bad things don't happen to healthy people that just, you know, for whatever reason things are set up, the immune system is either over aggressive or under aggressive, or there, you know, things came in succession. The waters were just right for something bad to happen. And I think we have to take it, not so much that, the world is ending, but this, you know, we haven't cured the world of infectious disease. People are arguing about treatments. Obviously hydroxychloroquine is out there and, you know, some people are taking it prophylactically. The president apparently is, you know, like you do malaria. And yes, we've had a lot of people over the years take hydroxychloroquine because or preventive for malaria, and they've done just fine, but sometimes they don't. Medications aren't without risk. The antiviral remdesivir does have side effects potentially, but again, you know, we have to weigh in medicine risk versus benefits, but potential side effects are liver and kidney disease, and they can be actually significant. If somebody has underlying kidney or liver disease, it can be much worse. So we have to take that into account. It's just, you know, again, medicine is not a blanket therapy for everybody. We have to look at where people are, what the risk versus benefit of a treatment is, and go. And we have to stop doing these blanket analysis and falling and arguing with people online about what's right. So, you know, it comes back to, what can you do to protect yourself? And, you know, I think that's the biggest, you know, where's this plant-based wellness podcast? And, you know, to protect yourself the most is to actually get your health the best you can at baseline, your immune status as best it can through nutrition and exercise, vitamin D outside. And then, you know, then you can attack things when they need to be attacked. I'm a cardiologist. Cardiovascular disease has not gone away since COVID came to town. So people are, you know, dying of COVID, but people still are dying of coronary artery disease, 650,000 people a year, and it still needs to be addressed. And, you know, people are still dying of complications of diabetes. I had somebody ask me yesterday, what happens if you just stop your blood pressure medicines? And that was what happens if you just stop your blood pressure medicines without doing anything different other than not filling your prescription? And I said, that's a very bad choice, because even though blood pressure medicines don't reverse hypertension, because hypertension is due to vascular disease, increased sympathetic tone, kidney disease causes the blood pressure to go up, not treating it is a risk of stroke, heart attack, kidney disease, peripheral vascular disease. So it's still, you know, a very real disease, high blood pressure. We think it's benign because we don't see people with blood pressure or hear tell of people with blood pressures of 220 that we can't get down. It does still happen in the emergency rooms. People do present with blood pressures that what we call, you know, accelerated or acute high blood pressures associated with symptoms of a stroke or seizures. That does still happen in areas. But for the most part, people walk around not knowing what their blood pressure is, and it's 140 to 160 or 170, and they're having vascular disease develop over time, whether it's dementia or, you know, again, these signs of peripheral vascular disease or kidney disease. So just stopping or not taking your blood pressure medicine is not a good idea without some sort of intervention. We know that when people come into the hospital and we put them on a low sodium DASH type diet, which is 1500 milligrams of sodium, most people's blood pressure will fall down towards normal relatively quickly. So we'll be able to back off on people's blood pressure medicine. So, you know, if someone were to change their diet and acutely limit their salt intake, that would certainly help their blood pressure. But they, you know, again, you have to do that on a day in and day out basis. It can't be a once in a while thing. The other thing that people can do to help themselves is obviously get the fat out of their diet, because we know that fat and oil is going to cause vasoconstriction. This great study that was done, was shown on the Game Changer movie, but it was done by Dr. Vogel, who was on the Game Changer movie back in the 80s. Blood pressure cuff to college or medical students, put it on, take it off, watch the artery and the brachial artery. After a fatty meal, the artery constricts for 3 to 6 hours. So a fatty meal is going to constrict the peripheral arteries and cause the blood pressure to go up. If the blood pressure is going up, that top number, the systolic blood pressure, the heart has to pump against that. So it's like trying to force your way out of a door that somebody's holding closed. The heart's going to have to work a lot harder than if the door could just open by itself to get the blood to the rest of the tissues. The diastolic blood pressure is when the heart relaxes after the initial pump of the blood, and that diastolic pressure actually comes back and feeds the coronary arteries. So if that number is high, then people are less likely to get coronary blood flow. So that's a problem as well. It's pretty rare for people to have isolated diastolic blood pressure issues, but they typically occur together. In older people, when the arteries become very stiff, that diastolic blood pressure can actually go down because the blood vessels are stiff. So the heart pumps against a stiff pipe, and then there's very low diastolic pressure. And in those people, it's actually dangerous because they're not perfusing their arteries either, because there's just not enough backflow to get blood back into the arteries. So you can't just stop your medications. Typically, blood pressure medications work by decreasing the volume in the blood vessels so that they're less taut, and that's how the blood pressure goes down, or it causes the arteries to dilate a little bit, or causes the blood pressure or the arteries not to react to adrenaline like they, you know, would. So it decreases the response to the sympathetic tone. That's what a beta blocker does. So just stopping medications abruptly can be dangerous, especially beta blockers. Some of the other ones you can stop and they won't cause a rebound high blood pressure, rebound elevated heart rate. But certainly that, you know, it's going to go back to normal. It's going to go back to the high number as opposed to going even higher than it did before. So, you know, without doing an intervention such as decreasing the salt in your diet or adding more greens to increase nitric oxide production or taking the fat out to decrease vasoconstriction, you just don't want to stop your medication. So even though, you know, there's side effects to blood pressure medications, they still prevent stroke and end-organ damage and heart failure. So they are a life-saving medication for people that don't change their lifestyle. What we do see is that doctors are reluctant to stop blood pressure medications in people that adopt a plant-based lifestyle because they can't believe anybody's actually getting better, which we know that you can get better from hypertension if you change your nutrition and your exercise. So it's possible, very possible, to get off your blood pressure medicines. But, you know, again, doctors are reluctant that people are actually going to stay with a lifestyle intervention. And we've seen that over the years. You know, before I changed my practice, we did a nutrition course, and that was really the main observation, that at, you know, 6 weeks of classes, people were eating plant-based and their blood pressure came down and their weight came down, and we were able to take them off medications. But after they quit coming to class, then they would slowly go back to their old ways. You know, they would go out to dinner with friends, or they would go on a trip, or their kids would come down, and, you know, their blood pressure would start to come up again. So that was one of the main reasons why we changed to the practice, so that everybody could come to nutrition class indefinitely. So it's almost as much a support group or a accountability group to stay plant-based in order to stay off your medications until it becomes secondary nature to be able to cook and eat this way. And it's still a community that provides a lot of support. You know, this leads me to the transition that you should always be able to ask why in a doctor's office, no matter whether you're speaking with a physician or the nurse practitioner or the physician's assistant or the nurse. And somebody should be able to give you a reasonable answer that is, you know, that makes sense to you and that you can ask additional questions. And if somebody's put off by you asking a question, then to me that means that they're uncomfortable with giving the answer, they're not sure of the answer, or they're uncomfortable at saying, I don't know. And that's a reasonable answer. Because if you ask why and somebody says, I don't know, then both of you are stimulated to, maybe we need to look into this a little bit more. Why this treatment? Why this choice of blood pressure medicine? Why this combination blood pressure medication when I could take two separate medication? What's the benefit? You know, what's the cost different? What happens if I don't do this? What alternatives are there to do? What happens if I did do nothing? You know, so the person on the street asked me, what happens if I don't take my blood pressure medicine? Obviously, his doctor really hadn't talked to him about whether or not he should take his medication. The problem that he had had was that he was given a medication that was three medications in one. That was very expensive. His insurance didn't pay for it, so he didn't pick it up. So he went without it. And then when his doctor asked, he's like, oh, then maybe I should get it. Can I, you know, and it was expensive. And the doctor said, he said, can you get this separate? And he's like, the doctor said, well, yeah, you can. But he was never given the option. And sometimes in physician's office, unfortunately, the pharmaceutical reps come in and say, well, you can have a coupon for these medications for a year, or, you know, you can have samples, and the doctor doesn't know actually what the medication costs. And then when you're titrating one of these three-in-one medications, well, how do you reduce it? Because do I need to reduce the diuretic portion? Do I need to be reducing the vasodilator portion? What portion is best to get rid of first? So again, in our practice, you know, we look at what medications are needed, the risk versus the benefit. If somebody has coronary artery disease or arrhythmias, that dictates how we back off on medications. You know, we back off on medications, obviously, with the biggest side effects first, typically, or the medication that poses the least amount of risk if somebody fluctuates in their diet at first. And we keep very close follow-up because, again, people struggle. People are human. They get into trouble. Their blood pressure goes up. What happens if my blood pressure does go up? What do I need to do? What's the best therapy? We have a lot of people that are very good at titrating their own medications. People with, decreased cardiac function, once they understand that the sodium that they're exposed to dictates their weight overnight, so you could have, you know, Chinese food that's plant-based that had a lot of soy sauce in it, and your weight could go up 3 or 4 pounds overnight, and that's enough to put somebody into heart failure. If people understand that and they're weighing every day, they can adjust their diuretic accordingly if they work with their doctor closely. So sometimes people maybe need to take a diuretic one time a week. My mother's one of those people. You know, she depending on, you know, she can go for weeks on end and not have to take her diuretic, but then maybe she'll go out and she'll have a plant-based entree that has more salt in it, then she'll have to take her diuretic to avoid getting into symptoms of heart failure. But, you know, again, that's the beauty of being in a practice like this, that we're, you know, we work closely with people. Sometimes when you're asking about medications, it's about the quality of life. Will taking this medication help my heart but increase my risk of diabetes or increase my risk of cancer or, you know, a variety of different things? Will taking, you know, we know now that taking proton pump inhibitors increase someone's risk of coronary artery disease or heart attacks. We know that taking proton pump inhibitors increase the risk of osteoporosis. Is there something you can do to avoid gastroesophageal reflux that you don't have to take omeprazole or a proton pump inhibitor? And of course there is. You know, it's changing your diet and getting the oil out of your diet will eliminate gastroesophageal reflux. There's nobody that I've seen yet that can't get rid of reflux by getting the oil out of their diet. It doesn't happen. You know, but by saying that, that also means nuts. So if somebody has a lot of gastroesophageal reflux and they get into nuts or a nut crust or something made with almond flour, something that's, you know, high in oil. You know, maybe there's vegan butter, maybe there's sunflower oil, some sort of oil back in there somewhere in the ingredient. They can have rip-roaring gastroesophageal reflux for weeks on end. As soon as they get rid of the oil out of the diet, they can tolerate spicy foods and a variety of things without any problems. You know, I wonder how many people have sat at home with chest pain and not gone to the doctor because either they couldn't get an appointment or they didn't want to go to the hospital because of the risk of infection. I can only hope that, you know, if you have symptoms of chest pressure, chest heaviness that doesn't go away with rest, if you have diaphoresis, if you have pain into your back, your neck, or your arms, you seek medical attention immediately. That's the risk factor. If you have discomfort or tightness in your chest when you exert yourself, you are still in the area where you can turn back time, changing your diet immediately. And if you're one of those people that have exertional chest discomfort or coronary artery disease that's already been diagnosed, it's very important that you get on the 4 to 5 cups of greens a day and get the oil and get the animal products out of your diet, and you can stabilize your blood vessels. A patient came to the office recently, and they were told that if they didn't have a procedure done for their diffuse coronary artery disease, that they risk sudden death. That's not untrue. And if they didn't do anything. But it's also true if they perhaps had a bypass or a stent placed through intervention. Because if there's scar and the heart function is not normal, there is, and the blood vessels are strained. So even those 20 percenters could turn to be a 99 percenter and cause an acute myocardial infarction the next day. So you could have a 99% stenosis and undergo a stent placement, and then the next day have a heart attack or an arrhythmia that killed you because of a 20% blockage that was unstable and ruptured and a blood clot formed. The stent didn't cause it. Life caused it if you're not changing how you live. People that adopt a plant-based diet, eating their greens, produce nitric oxide. Nitric oxide helps to stabilize the plaque. Decreasing the salt in the diet is going to lower the blood pressure, lowering the risk of rupture. Exercise lowers the sympathetic tone. A high sympathetic tone is what's going to lead to higher blood pressure, higher stress on the heart, perhaps more arrhythmias. So, you know, you can reduce the risk of sudden death with coronary artery disease by adopting a whole food plant-based diet. So, you know, we're not advocating doing nothing by any stretch of the imagination. It's not, I don't like medicine, just don't do it. It's please do your medicine unless you're going to change. And then we get rid of the medicine as we can and as you're able to change your nutrition. COVID's not like, you know, this quarantine is not unlike hurricane season, although it's more prolonged, in that people stress eat, or they eat everything's in their freezer, or now people are getting back together and their families are coming over and they want to celebrate, so they're eating poor food. I heard of a husband, you know, buying a bunch of Krispy Kreme donuts because his family's coming in that he hadn't seen for a long time, and they used to like donuts. And that's all well and good because it brought back good memories for him. However, he's not doing his family any benefits. And, you know, I like to give the example that I grew up with. And if you're a grandparent, and I'm soon to be a grandparent, hopefully, of what children remember about their grandparents and what it means. So I had one grandmother, and people that listen to the podcast a lot will know, that was lived in the country, raised a garden, had chickens, made bread, that salt rising bread that's in our cookbook, made those pies with sugar and berries, was a very, very good cook, to the point where she used to babysit me while my parents worked, and I didn't want to not eat dinner with her because her food was so good. So I didn't even eat dinner with my parents until I was probably a teenager. And I had another grandmother that ran a bar, And she was a good Italian cook, but I never ate with her because she was busy running the bar. And then she was very sick at a very young age. So I may have had one or two meals with her. She was somebody that, because she ran a bar that had a store, she would give us candy. So she would buy bags of, you know, little penny candy, and we'd have this sack of candy that would be what she gave us. I don't remember either of those grandmothers being judged for what they gave me. It was the time that I spent with them that was more meaningful. So it didn't matter that the one grandmother didn't bake the pies or have the special cookies, and it didn't matter that the other grandmother didn't have the sacks of candy and the sweets. It was because of them and their personality that I wanted to spend time. They were family, and the stories they told me. So when we get hung up on thinking that we need to buy sweets and treats to make people happy and to make them like us, it's you're really selling yourself short. You don't need to do that. They're already going to like you for who you are. You get a big pass for just being who you are and spending time with someone. So going for the walk to the park, you know, my grandfather never made anything for us in our lives other than he took us on walks and showed us different things and showed us how to do things that I won't put on this podcast because a lot of people would find it offensive as far as with guns and things like that. But he taught us life skills besides, you know, hunting that I remember him. And it was the kindness and the manner of which he did it, not what he did or what I remember him for. If he hadn't have ever shown us, you know, it was just spending time. So don't get caught up in thinking that you have to give kids treats and sweets and things like that to build memories. That's really not what the memory is. The memory is more about what you did together and being together. The actual details of, you know, what you ate is just like no different than what you wear. You know, if you went with somebody and you had a good time, you probably don't remember what they wore. You remember what you did with them. You probably don't remember what you ate, but you remember what you did with them and the time that you spent with them. So that's much, much more important. And I also think that's what's important right now with the isolation, that I think that we're affecting people's quality of life because they're not getting to see friends and relatives. And I think we're missing human-to-human contact. And so if you have the opportunity to have a conversation with somebody, I think it's well worth the risk. You might have your mask on us in the store, but you know, I find people are yearning to have a conversation, yearning for kindness at this point because they've been isolated. So take time to, you know, remember people are human. They're not just potential vectors of disease. I guess I'm just going to end a little bit on being vegan and being pregnant. So Addie is 40 weeks pregnant. Today we ran, walked 3 miles. She's walking or running a minute and jogging a minute and walking a minute. What we did after we warmed up for a mile. The pregnancies, she had a check today. The baby's 7 to 8.5 pounds. You know, doing well. All of her vital signs are good. She's never had any high blood pressure. Her weight gain has been excellent. You know, she's continued to work out. Her muscle tone is excellent. I think that's a testament and what we should strive for. You know, with our, that don't be worried if you have children that are plant-based or vegan and you're worried that they're not eating meat and they're pregnant. You know, Caleb had his third ultrasound today and everything looks great. And, you know, a lot of that is because, you know, and he's not officially late. He's just kind of right on time any day now. But by eating this, you know, don't ever, you know, she's got plenty of nutrients and antioxidants. She hasn't had a cold during her pregnancy. She has continued to work out. And, you know, again, vitals have all been good. And I think that's, you know, something we should strive for is to maintain our health throughout all stages of life. Caleb will, you know, come out, I'm sure, liking vegetables when he's able to eat, but he's going to have all the immunity that he needs through all the antioxidants that she's been taking in. The exercise has allowed her to carry the pregnancy to term and keep her blood pressure down. Watching her salt intake has been very important. And, you know, again, if you think you can't be pregnant and you can't run and you can't exercise and you can't eat vegan, not so. And, you know, we know other people, too, that have reversed their autoimmune disease, their polycystic ovary disease to be able to become pregnant and do well and deliver very healthy babies. So don't be concerned if your child is considering to be vegan or plant-based. If you're listening to this, it's very, you know, it cannot be more healthy, especially in today's environment. Decreasing inflammation, decreasing the risk of contamination of food products, being able to get food. So, you know, I think that's a big testament. And again, you know, we deal mainly in this podcast with reversing lifestyle diseases, but I think it's also how to promote a healthy lifestyle and healthy people. And, you know, we want to work with people to help them reach their athletic goals and their health goals for them and you know, and their family. So we have lots of young people that are doing really well with their kids being plant-based, and it's a great way for kids to understand where their food comes from and to eat a variety of color and do quite well. So don't be concerned that you have to eat meat if you're pregnant, or, you know, somebody's you have to have fish oil to get your omega-3s. You know, it's just not so. You can, iron comes from plants. It's in your greens and your beans and your grains. Your omega-3s, again, your greens and your beans. You can add a little flax or chia seeds in there. You get plenty through your diet. You get plenty of protein. You can get plenty of calories. You're getting all the antioxidants and phytonutrients that you need. You have a better chance of your blood pressure staying down if you're not eating processed food and highly salty foods. You're going to have, you know, if you think about it, when we look at blood flow to our arteries, you have to have blood flow to the placenta. What goes to the child through the placenta is a reflection of what the mom takes in and the mom experiences. So if mom is healthy with a low sympathetic tone and good nutrients and good vasodilators that she takes in, the baby's going to be healthy as well. So don't be afraid on that aspect either. So with that, you know, we're here in Houston, and again, any day we're hoping for a baby, and then we'll get Addie involved back into the practice. We are planning a virtual tour of the practice this summer so that you can see actually what goes on in a day-to-day practice with our office and what it looks like in our nutrition class. We'll give a sneak peek into people that are email subscribers. So go on over to drdelaney.com and sign up for our email, the newsletter. We put out a newsletter every month with some wellness tips as well as recipes and what's going on with the practice, and we'll let you know when we do the virtual tour. But we're going to have, you know, through Zoom or some other medium that you can actually see what we do, our yoga practice and our stretching practice and our nutrition classes and our in-office kitchen, so you can be a part of that. We are putting all our nutrition classes, or we're putting one nutrition class up a week on Zoom so that our members that don't live in town can do that. Our other plans are for another audio conference like we had in the spring. And then, you know, we want to get people into running as well. So plant-based runners, we want to get those people together. And then we'll have our spring plant-based nutrition conference. So that's what's on the docket for the practice in the near future. And again, as far as my running, run swim in Austin, Texas, followed by a marathon in December. And then we'll see what we're going to do, a practice. We're going to do a marathon in Florida in March for sure. That will be in celebration. More details to follow. So if you'd like to come down and run the marathon in Florida with us, We'll be giving you more details, but we have people in our practice that are training to do that with us. We're giving them plans and guidance and run clubs to do that marathon, but we'd like to have as many people run with us as we can. So you can put that on your calendar for March, or email me with questions about that at jamie@drdelaney.com. You can come run with the doc. We'll be doing the Houston Marathon in January, so that's on the docket. So I'm just looking forward to being smart about my training, continue to do, the build up gradually and increase my mileage gradually again. The one thing that's really helped me come back from this after I've got past the planks and the bird dogs as far as getting the pain to go away is what's called a suitcase carry. It's where you put a weight in one arm and walk, and it causes you to stabilize. The other exercise that Stuart McGill talks about is stir the pot, where you do a big Swiss ball, and you kind of stir the pot with it as you're doing a plank. That's been very helpful to me. And goblet squats, where you hold a weight in front of you and go down that way, as well as lunges. So, you know, if you're coming back from a back injury or you have weird pain and you're not sure about what is and you're a runner, give me an email. I can help you out, because a lot of people, they have pain in their groin and their butt, and they call it piriformis syndrome, or they call it a torn labrum, and they have all these diagnoses and sometimes even have surgery. And most of these things can be worked out through just being really aggressive at this, core stabilization and maintenance program. So give me an email at jamie@drdelaney.com. If you have any questions, go over to the website, see what's going on, sign up for our email so you can get some good tips. And there's a recipe every month. This month's email has got some good 30th of May recipes, cookout recipes. So thank you for listening, and I'll see you next week.